church. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting at 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is approximately 10 o'clock on, of course, Wednesday, September 11th, 2013. I have a few opening remarks, and I'll turn it over to my colleagues. I guess first I wanted to start with just thank everyone for being here today. We understand we have the Moldovan delegation here. We'll talk about that perhaps in a bit. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about September 11th today. I'm sure all of us are aware of the date and the significance. For me personally, it's hard to imagine it was 12 years ago today. I think back that my daughter was 9 years old at that time. Now she's already 21. And you think back to, I guess, the events that have taken place since that period of time. And there's different insights on good things, bad things. But for me personally, I think that the generation of Americans that are in their 20s now is perhaps the strongest generation of Americans that we've had in a long time. When they were 9, 10 years old, their country was attacked. And they got to see what happened. They got to see the good and the bad. They got to see that, as folks around the world see, that freedom isn't always a guarantee. And as we go forward now, figuring out what the next move is for U.S. foreign policy, I think it's very fitting that we have the delegation here today from Moldova, because that's the way countries should be working together, that we have problems, we have challenges, we get together, we talk about them. Michael and I were visiting beforehand. They're here to get some ideas and insights from us about how maybe they can do some of their electricity regulation, perhaps some of the generation needs they might need. They're relying on other countries to do their generation. But that's really the way to work out problems. I've actually never been in Moldova, but I've been in the Black Sea in that area, Turkey, quite a bit as part of the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit. So I know that part of the country as well as anybody from North Dakota, I would say, not certainly as well as people over there. But one of the things that really struck me when I was there was you grow up in the U.S. and it's the land of the V8. Everything's big and spacious. You don't have to understand other languages. You don't understand other cultures. But when you get over in Eastern Europe in that area, there's cultures that have been around since the beginning of time. And there's issues that there's no way you can really comprehend them unless you get over there and see them. So as Americans, I think it's very important for us to understand the complexities of the issues in other regions of the world before we go over there and start sticking our nose in too far. Figure out what's needed and then what we could offer up. So that's probably enough of my opining. I'm very glad that you're all here today. The commission meeting format is kind of dry, I will tell you. We have a variety of hearings that take place before this. We'll have work sessions where we really hammer out all the contentious issues. And by the time it gets to these meetings, most of it is we'll read the motion. Typically, we'll vote for it, because if we're not all in agreement, a lot of times it won't even make it to a vote. After the formal part of the meeting is done, we'll open it up to the media if they have any questions, and then we'll schedule some things. So I'm very glad you're here today. Hopefully we can answer any questions. I know you're going to be with us some time, but I'm just excited. And just for all the crowd, you notice that I don't have any Moldovan descent, but I have the same color scheme as the delegation. So I don't know, maybe it's that same ancestry somewhere. So thank you all for coming. I would turn it over to Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And another 9/11 reflection this morning. I thought about the fact that I don't know if there would be a much more similar weather day for North Dakota weather than today compared to what it was in 2001 on September 11th. Very much like today. And that morning, at the time, my mother was experiencing some health difficulties, and I used to call in the morning all the time and just check in on them. And I was working outside, and I called and was visiting with my dad, and he was telling me that, boy, he's just not sure we might have real problems in this country, because, as he put it, a plane hit one of those real tall buildings in New York. And I was trying to comfort him that I'm sure it was just a single-engine plane or something that, you know, someone had blacked out or something, and it was just an accident. And about then, and I'll leave the expletives out, but he informed me that as we were speaking, he had the TV on, and another one just hit. And that's when I realized we were in the middle of something far bigger than I had seen in my lifetime, and that it was really real. And so a lot has changed since then, but a lot of good things have happened since then too. And these kinds of things, as you said, Mr. Chairman, are the better way of doing international relations. And I sure appreciate you all coming over here and joining us today. I hope you find your time watching our activities useful, and I welcome you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'm again want to echo our appreciation for having our soon-to-be friends from Moldova here with us this morning. Emily McKay from the Great Plains Energy Corridor at Bismarck State College is their host, and this is part of a congressionally sponsored open world exchange. And so Emily and I have worked together for years, and when she called a few months ago saying, could we work something out, and we realized it they were going to be here during one of the weeks where we have our regular meetings. We have them every 2 weeks. So if you had come last week, we wouldn't have been able to show you this part of the process of what we do. So it worked out quite nicely. At the time, I didn't realize that it was September 11th when they would be here. And I, too, noted this morning as I was thinking through all this, wow, what an interesting coincidence that they're here on September 11th. There's been a lot of changes in our country and throughout the world since September 11th, and we've increased a lot of things. We've increased security a lot, but I don't think that we can really say we've increased peace, and I don't think we can really say we've increased safety. So we do have a lot of work remaining, and I want to echo my colleagues in saying that this is a great example of how countries can work together, and we can work. We hope that we have some things to offer you today in terms of experience and knowledge. I've looked at your resumes and your little bios, and I am very excited for our roundtable after the meeting, because you will find your compatriots here on our staff, people who have the same interests, the same concerns, who are working on all the same challenges here and have, in some cases, 30-plus years of experience in tackling them. So they're excited to share with you their experience and their knowledge. We're interested in hearing what your challenges are, and we hope that it's a really fruitful exchange. I think that's all I need to say about our extra guests, and so we'll move on with our meetings.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. We have a few items on the consent agenda. I would move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl.
Before we start, I forgot one thing. I want to say a special thanks to Scott Sheldon, who has worked on our staff to locate the translation equipment and make sure that you can all understand what we're saying, and to Esther Jangala, who helped do some coordination as well and setting things up on our end. So thanks, and thanks to all the staff who are taking time to participate.
I would echo Julie's sentiment, but I'd also say, Scott, who's listening, don't expect a raise, okay? All right. Item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the order granting Quest Corporation's request for a block of 1,000 numbers in the Fargo Rate Center, case number PU13-757.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. On August of this year, Quest Corporation, doing business as CenturyLink, submitted an application to NuStar Pooling Administrative System in North Dakota requesting additional 1,000 numbers in the Fargo Rate Center block. On August 20th that year, the customers indicated that they could only use a 701-715-9XXX block in these numbers. NuStar denied the request for additional numberings, and the way the law is set up such that under FCC rules, the commission, this Public Service Commission, has additional authority if there are certain conditions that are met that we can then go ahead and approve that numbering block. So in this case, the company showed a verifiable need that they had to have this specific customer block to meet their certain business needs. So based on that, I think it's very adequate that we approve this additional numbering block. It'll, like I said, be a 701-715-9XXX block of 1,000 numbers. And just for a little background, that one of the things that we watch closely is we're a 701 area code, and watching out till someday we'll exhaust those numbers and we'll have to have a second area code. In 2010, we were projected to need a second area code in the first quarter of 2015, but the projections today as of 2013 are now out to the second quarter of 2021. So I've asked Pat to do a little more research as to see why that is expending out so much, but our best guess is simply people are retiring their landlines, people are moving into the state with cell phones, different numbering blocks are available. So I have no concerns about issuing this additional 1,000 number blocks, and everything seems to be in order.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I do have one question.
Sure.
You said that they had met, I'm looking at the bottom of the page in this order, or near the bottom, last paragraph. It mentions a verifiable need. You said they had met that requirement, but earlier there's a line in there about the carrier will exhaust its numbering resources in a market or rate area within 3 months, and they have met that qualification, I presume?
Actually, I don't know that they've met that qualification. The qualification that I use is that there's the verifiable need, and so I think that given the fact that we have an additional 6 years now of numbers available with the 701 area code and the company really requests that need for this specific block, I felt it was appropriate.
Okay.
As we get closer to that exhausting those 701 numbers, I would anticipate perhaps a higher threshold as we get down to that point. Thanks, Ryan.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my agenda items, the shortest agenda we've had in quite some time. So, good. Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. RC1, I move the commission adopt an order to affirm notice of violation number 1301 issued to BNI Coal Limited at the Center Mine, acknowledge cancellation of the informal conference that was scheduled in this matter, and close the case.
Second.
A notice of violation, number 1301, was issued to BNI Coal on June 14th of 2013 for failure to construct and maintain a sump pump and a silt fence that are used as sediment control measures. BNI submitted a request for an informal conference in this matter then on June 24th, a couple weeks later. This action required the commission to assess a proposed penalty and schedule an informal conference in the matter. The commission proposed a civil penalty of $1,000 on July 10th and scheduled the informal conference for August 19th. BNI paid the proposed penalty of $1,000 on July 30th and withdrew its request for the informal conference on August 8th. The notice of violation was terminated on August 20th since BNI has completed the remedial measures specified. This final order affirms the notice of violation and $1,000 penalty. It also closes the case and acknowledges that the informal conference scheduled for August 19th was, in fact, canceled.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-763, canceling warehouse license number 1271 issued to Marvin and Michael Dick, doing business as Dick's Seed Farm at Munich, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Munich is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
Marvin and Michael Dick, doing business as Dick's Seed Farm, filed a request to discontinue business with the commission for its grain warehouse at Munich. The business has restructured and will be licensed as Dick's Seed LLC. Dick's Seed LLC filed an application for a grain warehouse license for this location, purchased the grain inventory in the warehouse, and that license approval under the new name will be the next item.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-754, granting the request of Dix's Seed LLC to operate a 100,000 bushel grain warehouse at Munich, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
As I mentioned in the previous agenda item, Dix's Seed LLC at Munich filed a license application to operate a 100,000 bushel grain warehouse at Munich. This warehouse was previously licensed by Marvin and Michael Dick. Statutory requirements have been met, and the staff recommends their request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-777. Canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2143 issued to Riverland Ag Corporation at Wahpeton, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Wahpeton is discontinued effective September 15th of 2013.
Second.
The Licensing Division received a request to discontinue business from Riverland Ag Corporation out of St. Louis Park, Minnesota, for its facility at Wahpeton. The facility was operated under a facility-based grain buyer license, and the facility has been sold. And on the next agenda item will be licensed to Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated. The facility is empty, and there are no outstanding unpaid scale tickets.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC5, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-778, granting the request of Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated to operate as a facility-based grain buyer at Wahpeton, North Dakota, effective September 15th of 2013.
Second.
As I mentioned in the previous agenda item, Minn Kota Ag Products Incorporated of Breckenridge, Minnesota, filed a license application to operate as a facility-based grain buyer at Wahpeton. This facility was purchased from Riverland Ag Corporation and has no grain inventory. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the request be approved.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda item. I would point out for our Moldova guests, one of those grain facilities that was mentioned is at Munich, North Dakota. And, you know, the traditional North Dakotans were primarily either German-Russian descent or Scandinavian descent. And if you go around North Dakota and look at the map, you'll see these small towns all over places like Munich and New Leipzig and so many of these community names that are taken from German communities and also Scandinavian communities. So I just thought that might be of interest to point out.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Also noteworthy to point out our agenda today is rather routine. We usually have a few more kind of interesting or controversial items on our agenda, but it does give you a sense for the breadth of our scope that we get into grain licensing and some things that you wouldn't necessarily think about in terms of a utility regulatory agency. So my first item, I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing and assess a $5,000 filing fee in the joint application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC. Submitted a joint application for the transfer of certificate of corridor compatibility number 131 and route permit number 140 to One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, case number PU 13-737.
Second.
In April 2012, the Commission issued a corridor certificate and route permit for 13 miles of 10.75-inch pipeline to transport natural gas from the State Line 1 and 2 gas processing plants near Williston to a Riverview Rail Terminal near Richland County, Montana. Those certificates and route permits were issued to One Oak Rockies Midstream. On August 12th of 2013, One Oak Rockies Midstream and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC submitted a joint application to transfer the certificate of corridor and the route permit to One Oak Bakken Pipeline. Anybody interested in commenting or requesting a hearing on this transfer must submit those comments to us by October 15th. This is a notice of opportunity for a hearing on this matter.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And a similar matter also for One Oak. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing and assess a $5,000 filing fee in the joint application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC and One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, who submitted a joint application for the transfer of first reissued first amended certificate of corridor compatibility number 122 and first reissued first amended routes permit number 131 to One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC, case number PU 13-738.
Second.
On September 7th of 2011, the commission issued a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit to Bearpaw Energy LLC to construct a 54.2 mile 10 inch diameter pipeline from the tailgate of Garden Creek Gas Plant to the Riverview Rail Terminal in Richland County, Montana. The North Dakota portion of the pipeline is located in McKenzie County. On October 27th of 2011, Bearpaw filed to amend this route corridor, and on December 2nd, 2011, first amended certificate of corridor compatibility number 122 and route permit number 131 were issued. Due to the company's name change to One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC, the first reissued first amended certificate of corridor compatibility number 122 and the route permit were issued then to One Oak Rockies Midstream in December of 2011. Now today they're looking to transfer those certificates and route permits to One Oak Rockies Midstream. Anybody interested in commenting on this matter should do so by October 15th of 2013.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
I do have a couple questions, and I don't know if these are for staff or you, Commissioner, but I got confused in looking at these because we're dealing with kind of the same company, and the number 131 is in each of them. Is there a pattern in our numbering? As I was trying to figure that out, is the route permit always 9 higher than the certificate of corridor compatibility number? Each one has a 131, but it's for different. I couldn't figure out why those two numbers would be different same case or what.
That hasn't occurred to me, so let's ask staff.
Patrick?
A pretty long history going.
Is there a short version of the long history?
Well, it's just that it goes way back to the beginning of the siting process, and you will find...
You should probably talk to the mic because the translator is listening to this via recording in the other room.
If you look back into all the certificates that have been issued in the past, you will find that there have been more route permits issued than corridor certificates. And when we issue a new certificate, new route, we just go to the next number. We go in sequence. But that's the reason why the numbers are different. And the 131 on case number 13-737 is a certificate of corridor. And the 131 on 13-738 is a route permit.
Yeah, that's what really made me notice and get to looking at that. Okay, thank you for that explanation.
Thank you, Pat.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell.
That concludes my portfolio, Chair.
The shortest meeting on record. All right. I'll go through a couple upcoming events. Tomorrow, the Commission will be in Williston for our third and final public hearing on the 345 KV line for Basin Electric. We found the past two hearings to be very spirited, and the first one, I think, went almost 12 hours. The second one was whittled down to about six. Tomorrow, I think we're anticipating another very full day of public input. It'll be held at the NDSU Research Extension Center west of Williston. On Friday, we will be traveling to Center North Dakota for a hearing on our 210-megawatt Bison 4 wind farm in Mercer Morton and Oliver County. That one will be starting at 9 o'clock. Next week, Monday, September 16th, we'll be having a formal hearing at 9 o'clock dealing with Otter Tail Power Company's environmental cost recovery rider, as well as MDU will be party to that case. A little bit farther out, September 17th, we're going to have a work session on the wind farm hearing that we'll have on Friday. And another formal hearing coming in Adams County down in Hettinger on September 19th, which would be next Thursday. That's for the Thunder Spirit wind farm, 150 megawatts. That's the wind farm that perhaps you've been tracking some of the discussion at the county level. I understand the county had a meeting last couple nights ago, so we'll see how that all plays out. But I'm looking forward to getting down there and holding that hearing. And you can look at the rest of the schedule. We've got telephone cases coming up, some advanced determination and prudence, some natural gas pipelines. So the commission continues to be busy. Thanks, staff, for all the work they're doing keeping us on schedule. Just a couple thoughts I wanted to add for the delegation, if you will, after my first comments. But the process is pretty similar. We'll have, like Commissioner Fedorchak had today, some motions announcing informal hearings coming up where the public can have more input if they'd like, making the awareness that's out there. We'll go out and we'll hold these hearings. If it's a hearing that's general nature, like a rate case, the hearings will be held right here. If it's a hearing that will be directly impacting the landowners, North Dakota law is we go to the county most affected and hold those hearings. So that's what we're going to Williston, which is the northwestern part of the state. We're going to Hettinger, the southwest part of the state, because where those projects are finally built, we want to make it easier for the public to come to those hearings. So after we have the hearings, that's where we collect the official record, because at the end of the day, there's three commissioners, and we're essentially a court. And so we'll have an official record built at the hearings. We'll come back and go through the work sessions. We always try to get to where the three of us are completely happy with the project before we bring it to a vote, but that obviously doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes you'll have 2-1 votes. And then whatever vote we have, whether it's a 2-1 vote or a 3-0 vote, each case we vote on can be appealed to a state court. And so at any given time, you'll probably see one or two of our cases under appeal. We just had one come back from the Supreme Court, which upheld our decision dealing with some telephone regulation. But what ends up happening, if the higher court does not like our decision, they don't tell us what to do exactly. They just refer it back to us and then tell us to look at some additional information. So that's the process. Some of the things that we really look at during the hearings, property rights are always a big issue. Where the power line is going to go, how it affects someone's property, how it affects their livelihood. Emergency response plans for pipelines, that at some point in time there may be a spill, making sure the pipeline response team is in place. Federal-state jurisdiction is one that this commission always, I should say myself personally, always struggle with. I like states' rights, but we certainly need federal jurisdiction in things like air quality. So we struggle with what's state jurisdiction, what's federal jurisdiction. You could even take it down to county jurisdiction, because I personally don't want to get in a situation where we have to override a county, let's say, to do something. So you really try to work with the county authorities that the projects are meet county requirements, state requirements, and meet a certain need. And then the basic thing is that all three of us are elected commissioners statewide. We're up every 6 years. So you know, we're directly responsible to the electorate in our decisions. So there's different models in different states. Some are appointed by governors. Some are directly elected. I personally like the directly elected because this is who we're responsible to, the people. That's why the public input session, I think, is so important. But I'd be curious if Randy or Julie has any comments on that before I open it up for questions, because I kind of give you the chance.
I think you've done a good job of summing it up, and I know Julie's been preparing and kind of taking a lead role in welcoming our guests, so I'll just turn it to her.
Yep.
Can you explain to the Moldavian people about the wind farms?
We'll be having a session after this meeting to have more in-depth discussion with the Moldovans about some of those issues and how the PSC works and stuff. But for now, I think Chairman Kalk has done an excellent job of providing a good overview of what we do, and it's a good springboard for our follow-up conversation.
Sure. All right, thank you, Julie. Be happy to answer any questions if we could.
If I could go to back to RC1, Commissioner Christman, how serious a violation was this?
You know, I guess we look at them all as serious if it's a violation. And in this case, it's been a while since we talked about the square footage and stuff of it. What happened was they had a little barrier up to prevent the torn up soil from the mine site from going out into undisturbed grassy areas. And it was not adequate. And with all the heavy rains last spring, there was some erosion out of there and it went out on the grass. They've since constructed a better barrier and they went out and cleaned up that soil on the grass. What it amounted to, and I'm going from memory here, but at one time I remember asking that question as far as square footage and how deep of an area was covered by the dirt that washed out there. And as I recall, it was like an inch or two of dirt that was covering the undisturbed grass. And I asked in square footage, and it was in this room when I asked the question, and I think in my own mind I concluded it was smaller than this room. So imagine an inch or two of dirt in an area not quite this big that gets out on some grass. They cleaned it up and built a better barrier. So while they're all serious, this isn't like, you know, a mile of land was eroded or anything like that. It was pretty easily cleaned up and fixed.
There hasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe somebody knows offhand, there haven't been too many fines recently against coal companies for any kind of reclamation violation or anything like this.
Yeah, they've been doing a tremendous job, but so have our staff people. And while the mines do a great job, our people do a great job of continuing to monitor them and make sure that when something like this happens, that we catch it and correct it while it's an area the size of this room instead of a section of land or anything like that. And I think that's just one of the things that's so outstanding about both the mining industry in North Dakota and our reclamation staff, that we're correcting relatively small problems instead of major ones.
This was the only violation issued this year. And I think it's also important to note that the staff, our inspectors, are out every month on site at these mines, so they do have an opportunity to work really closely with the mine staff on identifying any potential problems and addressing them before they become a real issue.
If I could, the 2 years ago we had an NOV that came in front of the commission for a hearing, and one of the things that came out during that was that our staff had talked to the company and really recommended they do certain things, and maybe the company didn't follow through with that, and that became a big issue, and it got to the commission, and we definitely were like, you know, our staff told you this was potentially a problem, they didn't follow through on it. I think that decision 2 years ago really set the tone that really empowered our staff to make sure they make the recommendation, the companies are really following through on that, because if it does come to an issue and the staff has told the company, it'll be viewed much differently in front of the commission than perhaps maybe it would have been in the past.
It's also noteworthy that it's years of high moisture and a lot of precipitation that have triggered more violations. In discussing things with staff, that's one of the most common causes of the violations is runoff issues.
I also noticed that you had a working session, was it Monday, or about rules for decommissioning wind farms?
Oh, absolutely. We have had spirited discussion about that as well. The legislature back in 2003 basically set the stage for wind farm development. And one of the things that happened after that was the commission at that time set forth a variety of rules, and one of the rules line was that after 10 years, the commission may institute a bonding requirement. So that 10-year period of those rules at that time is up this year for several wind farms. So we had a lot of discussion that day about, okay, what shall we do now? Should we require bonds? Should we have a workshop on winds? And basically what we decided is that they have, I think it's 4 wind farms that are up this year. So we're going to be, actually next meeting, you'll see a motion that I'll have that'll say, anyone requesting an informal hearing on wind farm decommissioning, you have until this date to do that. That's paraphrased. And then what we're going to be doing is having at least an informal on every wind farm, looking specifically at the plan they have in place, to what they initially filed, to what the situation is now, seeing if that's adequate. And in our discussion, we really, none of us were on the commission in 2003, so the 10-year period, I'm curious to see if that's going to be adequate. But I don't think until we get into some of the wind farm plans, the way they look now, the decommissioning plans. So I think this is going to be a very big issue for the commission to go through, because whatever we decide for these first wind farms, I don't say it necessarily will set the stage for all of them, because I would look at each one a little bit different depending on the companies. But by the same token, as we found out in this NOV that Commissioner Crispin was talking about, we hold our coal mines to a very, very high standard, and that's good. But perhaps we should be holding wind farms to that same standard. As they go through some point in time, those wind turbines will come down, and we want to make sure that there's adequate resources, that if the companies become insolvent, that the state and landowners are not stuck with wind turbines that no one is able to take down. So I see this as a big issue.
Just one piece of additional information on that, just to make sure you're clear. We'll be having the hearings when the 10 years expires for each company, not going through every single company this year. It's when they hit that 10-year threshold, since they were cited, then we'll be going through their plans and making sure they're adequate, because these wind farms are an integral part of our landscape today, and everybody in the state, I think, is on par with saying, let's make sure that we are adequately prepared to deal with them long term and take them down if they need to come down, or support them while they're up.
And I would just add one thing to that. In reviewing part of that whole process that included the rule on that a financial assurance can be required after 10 years of operation, the commission at that time also did require them, each company, to file a decommissioning plan. And in those plans, many of them talk about potential costs. Of course, some of those are, you know, 4, 5, 6, even up to 8 or 10-year-old plans. But those costs range, if you read through them, from, you know, when they divided it down using their numbers, from maybe $40,000+ per turbine to over $100,000 per turbine. And we have almost 1,000 wind turbines in the state of North Dakota. And so at some point, the cumulative amount of money that will be required to dismantle those when they're no longer useful is a pretty high dollar amount.
You know what the average, what is a projected life of a wind farm or a turbine?
We asked that question at all the hearings, what's the projected life? And we'll get answers back from 20 years to 30 years, depending what turbines they have. But the companies will also say that they hope to, at the end of that 20-year life cycle, they basically take the insides out and put in a whole new set of insides. So it could be longer than that. But I think the concern that I would have on that is, if you go the other way, where all of a sudden a small wind farm owned by a small company decides just to dissolve, who's then going to make sure it gets decommissioned? Just to give you a visual, the wind farms that are coming due this year are the 2 turbines as you make your way to Minot, the ones that have the blue base, those are 2 of them. The individual wind farm out by, I think it's Valley City, the one up by Petersburg, it's some of those farms that were cited as just, I would call, demonstration projects, because the commission didn't have siting authority on those turbines at that time, because the threshold was, I think, 100 megawatts. But we always had decommissioning authority, if you will, a responsibility.
Dave, you point out an interesting piece about this in asking how long the wind farms are expected to last. This is such a new industry, nobody really knows for sure. And that's what I appreciate about what the last commission did, is they set a trigger to reexamine the plan. And I think that's appropriate when you have a new industry like this. It's got entirely new infrastructure, new technology, to relook at these things as time goes on to make sure what we have in place is correct, or maybe we fine-tune it up or down depending on what we learn. So I appreciate having this trigger to reexamine these plans and make sure that what was decided 10 years ago when this was a brand-new industry is still the best approach today.
Are they required to have bonds now?
They are not. The rule says the commission may assess a bond after 10 years. So they're required to file a decommissioning plan when they get their certificate, if you will. But no one really, quite honestly, has scrubbed those till that 10-year period is coming due now, so that's the goal. And the put one more plug out there is that I'm hopeful to hear back from the groups such as the Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, those folks that are, you know, directly involved with owning the land, because at the end of the day, these wind farms are on people's private property. So you've got the landowner that has probably the most direct concern on it. So it'd be nice to hear what those groups have to say in some of this as these potential hearings play out. So,
and I think, too, it's important to keep in mind when we're holding these hearings, this is something important for the folks that own the land now. You know, in many cases, a wind farm can be very beneficial to a current landowner and get those payments. And by the time the facility is no longer useful, it might be different landowners that didn't receive the payments have a whole different perspective on the importance of a decommissioning plan. And so I think this will be some interesting hearings and an important piece of work, because just as 30 or 40 years ago, North Dakotans made a decision that they didn't want any more abandoned spoil piles at old mine sites, that we wanted to come up with a reclamation plan so that, as Governor Link put it, when the gondolas stop, the land is back into good agricultural purposes again. I don't think that future generations would look kindly upon us if in 100 years from now there's 1,000 wind turbines out there just blowing in the wind, doing absolutely nothing. And I know that that's not the intention of the companies, but I think we want to make sure that things are in place to make sure that there's adequate resources to see that that doesn't happen.
All right. Anything else, Dave?
I could be a Dale Wetzel and ask this question.
We would appreciate that. Yeah, why not?
Why not? On the consent agenda, you have 3 refunds to NSP.
We do.
XL. How much? Do you know how much?
Oh, I do, actually. It's in there. They range from $25,000, I think, to... Let's look here and give you the exact numbers. They are for the rate cases that... Not the one that's in front of us right now, but the $124,000 for PU-10127, which was the rate case... Oh, that's for the ADP for Prairie Island, I'm sorry. But that, nevertheless, that's a refund back to them for the Prairie Island ADP that the commission granted. $23,000 for 2011 rate case, and then $24,890 for the 2012 rate case. So it's ironic, quite honestly, because I saw that, too, to make sure they weren't refunding the money for this current rate case, which we're still under, but that's for the ones that they've done before.
Did they go into Dave Cedar's quest salary? Is that the deal? Or?
That's what we're thinking, since he happens to be here today.
Yes, so. Exactly.
All right. Nick, did you have any questions?
He pretty much covered it.
Okay.
Hey, I didn't have to talk.
Okay.
I know that. If you could grab a microphone, too, that would be helpful just for those listening. Dave will help you out, I bet.
This one? Why don't I sit down here?
No, there's been a lot of penalties on the oil industry. Do you know if it's been decreasing any or what's been happening on that, really?
One of the things that I'm always reluctant to talk about is areas that I have no jurisdiction.
You don't have no jurisdiction
and
on
so
that.
So this case here...
Who's got jurisdiction?
The Oil and Gas Federal? And Industrial Commission would have the jurisdiction on that. Where we would have jurisdiction if there's a crude oil pipeline, that perhaps there's a spill.
That broke or spilled,
Dealing with a violation of call before you dig. That'd be the area that we would have jurisdiction.
Okay.
For the call before you dig, we've been holding steady on that, really reinforced the program. But And I think that's probably your question is
perhaps
a different agency.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. See, to our Melbovians, that's the way you push it to somebody else to answer the hard questions. No, it's just very reluctant to talk about someone else's jurisdiction because it just wouldn't have the accurate data perhaps. So, okay, going once, going twice. Julie?
I have just one thing I forgot to mention earlier on, but we have the map up there of Moldova because we wanted everyone in the audience to be able to see where you all are from and in relation
south,
to the
Julie,
rest.
Where are you all from?
You all. Southern North Dakota, no. I was in 12 or so years ago, 13 years ago, I was on a three-week exchange, similar to what you are doing, to the country of Bulgaria, which is a very close neighbor of yours. Spent 3 weeks over there, and I learned a lot about that country, which was at the time trying to establish its own democracy and the struggles of doing so. But, and one thing that I really came to appreciate about Bulgaria was their wonderful food and their incredible wine. And you would not have expected that coming from the U.S., that that's where wonderful wine is made. And then in reading about your country, I learned that you have the largest wine cellars in the world. So here's to you guys. Did you bring some wine over for Emily? Maybe you can send some back when you get home. That's all.
All right. I believe that maybe we could walk through the format for the rest of the day, commissioners. We'll take a quick 5-minute break, and then we'll come back for the administrative portion of our meeting. And as soon as we're done with that, then what do we have planned?
Then
the meeting
will
be done. But
then we have a lunch in this room, maybe a break, depending on the time, and a lunch in this room and a roundtable discussion with staff. And media are welcome to attend. It's an open meeting if you're interested.
And then, too, Commissioner, I'll be leaving at 11:30. I should be back by 12:15.
Excellent.
All right.
Did you say you're paying for lunch?
There is no free lunch, Dave. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? All right, we'll close the regular scheduled meeting, and we'll open up again in 10 to 5 minutes for our administrative portion of the meeting. Thank you.